This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, Science and Medicine Under Pressure. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Research usually moves at its own pace, and it's more of a turtle than a hare. The system is designed with careful steps that build on each other. Checks and balances are in place that are supposed to catch errors in study design and flaws in the data, all to make sure that scientists get it right and patients are safe. Over the years, some researchers and patients have argued that the system is too slow, that it's making it too hard to get new treatments, or even discouraging innovation. And now we're suddenly in overdrive, sidestepping some of the safeguards to get results faster. Add to that a highly polarized political landscape and the fact that this is the first global pandemic in the age of social media, where any new piece of information, true or not, can be shared to millions of people instantly. It makes for a pretty stressful situation. Nina Feldman has this story about one drug that's gotten caught up in this mix, and it's not the one you may be thinking about.
From the very first days of the pandemic, Alexis Lieberman felt she had to do something. She's a pediatrician in Philadelphia, and infectious diseases are not her specialty. But like a lot of doctors, she felt it was her role to help in a medical emergency. She talked about this with her dad, a retired physician.
And the first thing that he said to me was, "We've got to find a drug that will stop it from progressing so that you can give it to people at the first sign of illness or maybe even the first sign of possible illness and have most people not progress to end up in the hospital." So that was the goal.
Alexis took his words to heart. She started to spend her evenings scrolling through the doctor Facebook group she's a part of to see what people were doing.
There were people who were just trying things. That's it, trying things. Especially ICU doctors and hospitalists were just trying things to see what would work. So I read all of these, I think I'm not exaggerating if I say 10,000 posts in the space of, you know, the month of March. And everything anybody said they had tried that they thought might work, I wrote down.
That's her lap dog panting in the background. Anyway, Alexis spent hours digging deeper, pursuing leads, cross-referencing drugs people mentioned with the risks. She ruled out the drugs with too many potential side effects. And what she was left with was an inexpensive, low-risk, antiparasitic drug called ivermectin. It's used all the time in India and Latin America to treat worms and to treat heartworm in pets. Ivermectin had been shown to slow the replication of other viruses in cells, like dengue and yellow fever. And it's considered very safe. So, when one of her best friends called her with COVID symptoms, Alexis asked if she wanted to try ivermectin.
We kind of thought, well, there's no negatives to taking this. It's not going to have, you know, any really bad side effects. It could help. Why not?
That's Alexis's longtime family friend, Heather Coots.
So she prescribed ivermectin to me, and within 2 days, I felt like normal again. It was super quick.
So that was pretty astounding. Not proof of anything, but pretty astounding.
Meanwhile, some more evidence had emerged to support the use of ivermectin for COVID. A group of Australian researchers added the drug to cells infected with the coronavirus in a test tube. Within 48 hours, essentially all the viral material was gone. These results were not a miracle cure. The dose of ivermectin used on the cells was way too high to be safe in the human body. Still, the researchers wrote that ivermectin could slow the replication of the virus in humans, even at lower doses. Alexis was encouraged by these results and her success with Heather. So she started prescribing ivermectin to other people with COVID. And it seemed like it worked. Excited to share, she started posting about it in one of her doctor's Facebook groups and telling her colleagues. The response she got was very negative.
I even interacted with another friend who's a doctor, and I threw it out as an idea, and she responded by saying, "We could try Eye of Newt as well." Very sarcastic, very, "You are doing witchcraft, you're not doing medicine." And that's been the tone. Why don't we try some mugwort? You know, why don't we try some fairy dust?
Alexis was surprised. It's common for doctors to prescribe off-label drugs with a safe track record. And more small studies were coming out, showing ivermectin had promise. Alexis was confused. What happened to the spirit of experimentation that had flooded the Facebook pages just a few months earlier? What had happened was hydroxychloroquine. President Donald Trump hailed the anti-malarial drug as a potential game changer, with very little scientific evidence backing his claim. It sparked a shortage of the drug and a frenzy of self-medication. So now, many doctors were wary of even talking about any promising drug without enough evidence to back it. And some people said that what little research there was for ivermectin didn't look promising. They pointed to that toxic dosage level from the test tube study.
And they said, forget it. The concentration is too high. Kill it right away.
That's Carlos Shakur. He's a researcher in Spain who's been studying ivermectin for over a decade. When the pandemic hit, he was planning to conduct a trial to see if ivermectin could help with COVID. But like Alexis, Carlos was flooded with responses telling him not to bother. And what's more, that researching the drug would be irresponsible.
I got super annoyed at that guy calling me. The way I describe what he did is he gringo-splained ivermectin to me.
Wait, which guy?
Well, some Anglo-Saxon researcher calling to gringo-splain me my drug and say, oh, I want to add to your thinking because you should consider this and why it should work. The dose is too high. Oh, wow, don't tell me.
Carlos has been studying ivermectin for most of his career, which means that he understands its limitations too. Just like the people who were afraid that ivermectin could become the next hydroxychloroquine, Carlos was afraid of what would happen if a desperate public caught wind of a promising drug without enough research to back it. And in fact, thousands of miles away, in the depths of the Peruvian rainforest, that was already happening. Peru was hit hard by COVID, and it was especially difficult to treat indigenous communities in its remote Amazonian region. By mid-May, hospital beds there were overflowing and oxygen supply was running out. Ivermectin is already popular and available over-the-counter in Peru for the treatment of worms. So when the test tube study came out, health officials there took note. This could be huge. Soon after, what seemed like another promising study came out. A Chicago-based company called Surgisphere released a huge pool of patient data from more than 1,000 hospitals across the world. Researchers published preprints, or studies that haven't yet been peer-reviewed, drawing from that data. And one showed ivermectin reduced the death rate of COVID patients by 83%. But a few weeks later, it turned out the data from this study was not reliable. The journals that published those studies retracted them.
The preprint just disappeared. There's a ghost of this preprint driving policy decisions all through Latin America.
It was too late. The health ministries in Peru and Bolivia had already added ivermectin into their national COVID guidelines. The Peruvian president promoted ivermectin and said there was no time for evidence-based science.
Well, you can say, well, what's the risk, Carlos? This drug is very safe. Well, there is a risk. What happens is that this drug is widely available as veterinary formulation. So if you decide to buy it, and inject yourself with whatever amount you want, it's very difficult to control that. And that's exactly what has happened in Peru and Bolivia.
In the Peruvian jungle, local news outlets reported a group of evangelical missionaries worked with a province leader to offer thousands of free injections of ivermectin. In some cases, the reports said it was the kind designed for animals.
So, okay, you want to inject 5,000 people with the drug that is destined for veterinary uses. All right, who's following up on that? Who's checking if there were pregnant women? Who is checking if somebody had convulsions? Nobody. You just go in, you do a humanitarian service, you leave.
As for whether it worked, COVID cases did subside in June in the Peruvian jungle provinces. But because it was used so widely, it's very difficult to isolate ivermectin as the cause of the drop. Cases are back up now in Peru. After Brazil, it has the most COVID deaths in South America. Back in Philly, Alexis Lieberman understands these risks. But the way she sees it, that's all the more reason to run a big study and show that either ivermectin works or it doesn't. There was already a doctor in Florida who was treating patients with the drug and publishing promising results. And there was research from Iraq showing that ivermectin sped up recovery time. But those were observational studies. Basically, they analyzed data in retrospect. To really prove something works, researchers want a double-blind, randomized control trial, the gold standard. Alexis just can't wrap her mind around why a large research institution wouldn't take that on.
I don't know that ivermectin would fix it, but I will tell you that I've given it to a dozen people and they've all gotten better in about 48 hours. It's worth one big, fast, well-designed, well-funded study that I think the government should pay for.
Alexis assembled a group of doctors from around the world who'd also had some success with ivermectin, and they tried to get their own trial off the ground. But they couldn't really get any traction. It's hard to design and build a study like that without the backing of a large research institution. Alexis even asked for help from someone at Merck, the pharmaceutical company that developed ivermectin back in the 80s.
So we read your case series, and we ran our models, and we do not think it is plausible, so we will not be pursuing research on ivermectin.
Merck declined my interview request, but sent me a statement that said basically the same thing. It is worth noting that Merck's patent for ivermectin expired in 1995. They're in the process of creating a new compound treatment for COVID-19 and are also involved in vaccine trials. Across the country from Alexis, a Malibu-based researcher named Sabine Hazen hasn't been surprised that it's been a slog to garner interest in ivermectin.
You know, nobody wants to invest in trials in medications that are cheap because they're not making any money.
Sabine's a gastroenterologist by training, but has managed to get a study for ivermectin as a COVID treatment approved by the FDA. If there's one thing she's good at, it's running clinical trials. She's done more than 150 for pharmaceutical companies. Sabine's true passion is not viruses, but the microbiome, or the bacteria and other organisms that make up our guts.
Midlife crisis. I told my husband, I'm like, look, I'm not buying a Lamborghini. I'm buying a $250,000 machine to analyze stools and understand life.
When the pandemic hit, she wanted to keep running trials for her own research, but she couldn't even get patients to come to the clinic. No one seemed to care about the gut anymore.
We all want to go back to treating what we were supposed to be treating, you know, other diseases. There's not only COVID-19 in the world. You know, people are dying of other things. So the sooner we get rid of COVID-19, the sooner we can go back to what we were doing.
So Sabine teamed up with another doctor and submitted a clinical trial protocol for ivermectin. She didn't do it for the money. She knew because ivermectin is generic, there's not much to be made on it. But she figured this would be the fastest path back to her passion.
I honestly think there's something wrong with me because I play with poop, I play with a dangerous virus, and I play with I'm in bed with pharma and the FDA. And let's not forget the FDA.
But it's because of Sabine's experience working with the regulatory agencies and her financial situation, that she was able to get the trial off the ground. She'll have to supply more than 300 patients with heart monitoring holters, pulse oximeters, and testing swabs at their homes. She'll hire nurses to come out and draw people's blood. Sabine is paying out of her own savings. She hopes the trials will attract the attention of pharmaceutical companies who will eventually invest, but she hasn't had any luck so far. In the meantime, Alexis is still offering ivermectin to COVID patients in Philadelphia. She always includes the caveat that it's not FDA approved for this, but it's generally safe, and there are a few promising studies supporting its use. She tries to resist drifting towards conspiracy theories that there's a concerted effort to stamp out the drug.
You don't need a special conspiracy. You don't need a cabal of people in a back room say, oh, let's make sure this one doesn't go because we're going to make more money off of the other one. I don't think you need that. I think you just have a million small actors who act in their small field and are completely ruled by what will make money.
She figures the drug's not lucrative, so it's just not a priority. But for her, as long as people are still dying, it is.
That was Nina Feldman reporting.